Don't forget, you need to log on to Highland Radio to be in with a chance to win €20,000 in the Mega Summer Draw. You can win €20,000 in cash, and the first draw will take place tomorrow, the 15th of August. So we're giving away €2,500 in cash each Friday until Friday, 5th of September. And on the 9 till noon show then, you can win €10,000. So you can log on to highlandradio.com, click on the draw link, and you can get one ticket for €15 or five for €50. You can also give us a call here on 074 91 25,000, and we'll be happy to process that for you as well. Some of your comments. Hi, can you make residents along the Marble Hill Road aware that when they leave their bins out to get emptied, to lift them in again? Yesterday evening, I was leaving Marble Hill Beach and a Jeep was a little in front of me. He had stopped and was out of his Jeep heading towards a wheelie bin with a bag of rubbish. Only a man on a bike shouted, "What are you at?" He had the lid up and at this stage, however, put the lid back down and walked back to the Jeep with his bag of rubbish. He was clearly going to dump his rubbish into someone else's bin instead of taking it home with him. Only he was startled. The Jeep was also a Donegal Rage and not a visitor. Another listener says, why are there no concerns with traffic parking in the village of Dunfanaghy? I cannot understand how you can sit on the main N56 road, eat and get drunk. There's obviously serious concern for people's safety and how the council allows this. I wonder, is there a health and safety report for this? Also, I have witnessed emergency vehicles try to get through this mess with blue lights. I can't see how the council have passed this. Clearly, footpaths need to be made smaller to widen the street. Now, I am joined in studio by Paul McLaughlin of Balladerg Garden Station at the Mountain Top here in Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Michaela.
Are you enjoying the good weather?
It's grand, actually. Nice wee boost at the end of the,
yeah,
towards the end
lovely,
of the summer.
Isn't it? Right. What about the rain that's out there today, though?
No sign of it yet, anyway.
There was this morning a wee bit of a drizzle, but I suppose that helps, having the balance, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah.
The sunshine and the bit of the rain. So you've been driving about the county over the last few weeks and you've seen plenty of plants looking great.
Yeah, exactly. The county's looking very good. It's been sort of the stage of the summer, it always looks great.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
but there are a couple sort of jumping out at you at the minute there. And if you notice them, the crasmia there,
okay,
which people might be familiar with, that they're growing along the road. Sides these days, real vibrant orange flower.
Oh yes, they're lovely.
Yeah, the sort of grassy thing.
Yeah.
They're getting a wee bit controversial now. They're sort of doing too well at the minute.
Right.
They're introduced to Ireland from South Africa as a garden plant, but
okay,
they've kind of escaped, so they have in their
nearly like a wildflower, is it
pretty
now?
Much, yeah. So they're kind of becoming almost invasive. They just love the conditions in Ireland,
right?
The sort of warm, damp summers, and that's just perfect for them. But
yeah,
but they are looking amazing at the minute, so they're sort of on the border of whether they're just doing too well, kind of.
And what else have you seen? The hydrangeas?
Yes, the hydrangeas. Probably one of the most sort of traditionally, one of the most popular plants in Donegal. Sort of everybody remembers it from their granny's garden and stuff like that.
Everybody had one, didn't
they? Yeah, pretty much. Suppose the fact that everybody had one is their testament. They're quite easy to grow.
Okay.
They're very easy to propagate yourself. Back maybe before people had garden centres and that, they would have taken a snip off somebody else's, stuck it in, they're nearly guaranteed to grow. But looking very well at the minute there, and will continue to through September, October.
Yeah, so that's what I need, something very easy to grow.
Yes.
Not that I do much of the gardening, but I just feel that. And there's so much maintenance. Whereas these kind of grow themselves and
pretty much
easy enough maintained.
Yeah. Cut them back once a year and let them batter on themselves. They're
and you can
enough.
Get them in any colour as well.
Yes, used to be traditionally it was always just the pinks and blues. And that was dictated by your soil. If you had acidic soil, you had a pink one. And if you had alkaline soil, you had a blue one.
Oh, right.
But now they've actually been hybridised more and more, so you can get all sorts of more vibrant colours and everything else.
Very good. So anybody that's keen to do any work in the garden this good weather, what would your tips be?
Yeah. Generally, tips, get out there, get involved, enjoy your garden. This is the sort of weather that we work for, if you know what I mean. Now is good enough time to be planting away at stuff. Like, obviously, if you're maintaining the lawn, just be careful if the dry spell continues too much.
Yeah.
Maybe don't cut the lawn too low because you might stress it out a bit, if you know what I mean. But generally,
how often should you cut it?
I suppose depends what sort of lawn you're looking for.
Okay.
Some people are looking for the bowling green sort of thing. There you'll be chatting, cutting at least once a week, maybe more.
Okay.
If you know what I mean. Whereas the average person, like even average green areas, an average lawn. Like people in Donegal tend to have quite big lawns, so they don't cut them that often. But generally about every 2 weeks.
Yeah, my husband has one of the robo
mowers. Yes.
But now he'd put it out a few times a week. Mm-hmm. Is that where we're going wrong?
Yes. No. That's very good. Now, funny, the robots kind of work almost consistently, if you know what I mean, because my brother's one down there and it's always floating about there, so it is. Yeah, but they seem to be, in fairness, my brother actually, his garden, he has just wired one side of it for the robot.
Okay. Yeah.
And he just cuts the other one normally.
Ah, right, okay.
And actually now after the course of about a year, the side of the robot is actually looking a lot better
than
the side that he cuts just regularly, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So it is. So it seems to be just, I've been keeping an eye on it
to see which way.
Obviously, the robots leave the grass behind them. They cut it quite regularly. So that's always working down in the grass.
Well, suppose that's maybe the aim then, that if you do cut it regularly, there's not as much left then.
Exactly. Lying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can kind of liquefy the sort of grass clippings almost. So that then becomes fertilizer to grow on the grass.
Okay.
For the future.
Yeah, it's not fertilising ours too much now.
No.
I also have a dog, which doesn't help.
Right,
the grass,
yes. They can bring their own problems.
Yeah, that's probably the main issue. And what about, we were talking about hydrangeas there and, you know, taking cuttings.
Yeah.
Do people still take cuttings of different plants that they see along roadsides?
Oh, absolutely. It'd be sort of, a lot of people even would use it as a hobby, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So they would just grow on plants. I suppose there's no real downside to it in the sense that you plant in the plant. If it doesn't work, it's cost you nothing.
Yeah.
And if it does work, you have a brand new plant that you can brag to your friends that you grew yourself.
And is there any particular time of the year that this is the best time to do it?
Yeah, so certain plants work certain times a year, but now is pretty much prime time, sort of into late August into September.
Okay.
It's, if you're going to try something, try it now. That's probably your best chance of success.
Yeah.
You're not into the cold of the winter, and you're sort of theoretically past the very warm bit of the summer.
Yeah.
So now should be a perfect time to do it.
And what about trying to grow fruit and veg?
Fruit and veg, yes.
Difficult, is it?
Not at all. So it's not. No, some fruit and veg can be quite difficult to grow, but a lot of it is actually quite easy.
Okay.
So it is now. It's a matter of, you just go down and get a packet of seeds and sort of start with someone. The big key to people is start with someone you like.
Okay.
Because you get stuff that's very easy to grow, but maybe nobody in the house will eat it. Which is kind of a waste, if you know what I mean. Yeah. But even start with some of the herbs.
Yeah.
So you'll always use them, like, and sort of build yourself up.
Yeah. And, you know, if you get the small herb plants in a supermarket and plant them.
Yeah.
Are they as good, or should you start with the seeds?
To be honest, I've had mixed success with the ones you buy in the supermarket.
Me too.
So in a lot of cases, what happens in a lot of cases for them, they're produced for the food, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So they're producing a very quick...
Just to eat.
Yeah, exactly. And they're sort of forced on almost.
Yeah.
And once they're liquid fed in the nursery where they're produced.
Right, okay.
And whenever you bring them home, you're not sort of giving them the same care and attention.
Yeah.
So they can actually go backwards.
Right, okay.
A lot of time, if you want to do something like even rosemary, mint would be very easy to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And even basil, stuff like that there. You're better starting from seeds nearly. Because
you're
producing it at a slower rate. It'll take you longer to get
and
there.
And it suits your environment then.
Exactly.
Too.
And you will have a much stronger plant.
And do you need to harvest them often?
Yes.
Do you know if you let it just grow wild, it kind of kills it, does it?
No, it wouldn't kill it so much, but no, they do sort of benefit from and cut back quite regularly.
Yeah.
So they do, and by doing that, you're also just giving it a chance to regenerate themselves. And for herbs for use, they're sort of the fresher leaves would tend to be more potent. So
yeah,
the more you cut it back, generally, the more you produce.
Yeah, I purchased a chili plant.
Yes.
But it was kind of like that. It was in a supermarket. It was going great for a couple of weeks, but I don't know. And there seems to be a terrible sap on it.
No, no, no.
Very sticky now.
Right.
But it's not going too well.
Have you got many chilies off it?
Yeah, a good few, actually.
Oh,
now, I can't determine if there's definitely new ones growing or not.
Right.
But there are some smaller ones. But when I bought it, the chilies were great. And I have it maybe over a month now, and I've got maybe two harvests of it,
no,
and there's still more on it.
Right. And if you see wee flowers forming, the chili will come after this.
Right, okay.
Right. Well,
that's a good to note. And we were talking about lawns earlier and mowing your lawn. So what would be, if somebody wants to get like a Wimbledon-esque garden, what would be your tips for that?
Yeah, pretty much at this stage, if the weather continues to be very dry, maybe lift the lawnmower blades a couple of clicks and just don't stress it out in that sense. Generally, coming in now to the autumn, you can give it a feed. It'd be a slightly different feed than you would give in the springtime. It'd be sort of less nitrogen in it.
Right.
Which kind of builds up the plant roots, and that without actually growing on the grass too much. So that should set them up nicely to go well over the winter.
Yeah.
And then should be ready to spring, whenever the spring comes in, if you know what I mean.
And is there anything that you should do over the winter, or now's the time to kind of put the work in?
Yeah, pretty much. A lot of people around here, moss tends to be a big problem with it. So if you want to reduce the susceptibility to moss, you can actually, this time of year, you can give it a thing, run over with a thing called a scarifier, which pulls out a lot of the moss that's there. And over the winter, like especially the autumn time, if leaves tend to build up in your lawn, maybe actually just rake off the leaves if you get a chance. Because the leaves sort of hold the moisture there, which becomes a better environment for the moss to come along.
Yeah. And if, you know, nice holiday time, a lot of people are away, so I suppose that's a good time to give, if they're going to treat the garden, to give it a rest and get it to regenerate.
Yes, absolutely. Now, from now on, it's a grand time for the autumn feed, you know, and especially if you are away and not going to be cutting for a few weeks.
Yeah.
So a lot of time, a lot of fertilisers, they work whenever the grass is actively growing. So if you're applying a fertiliser to that, generally a good idea. Cut it, leave it for about 3 days until it's starting to recover, then put on the fertiliser.
Right, okay.
And then it'll actually absorb it much better.
Yeah. An awful lot of work on all this, Paul.
Oh, a lot of work, all right. That keeps me busy.
Yeah, sure, everybody gets there. Do you notice that, you know, we've had great heat this summer. Do you notice a difference compared to last year?
Yeah, funny, there would be. Last year was a bit of a disaster every year in terms of, I don't think there was 48 hours without rain.
Yeah.
So no, definitely there's, everything's looking better this year. We did get heat and we did get rain, we got it all at the right times, kind of.
Yeah.
So we did. So now it's been quite a good year for it.
Yeah, that's ideal. Some of your questions now for Paul. I have hydrangeas in a large pot. They have lost their vibrant colour and look like they're dying off.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If they're in a pot, I would say the likelihood is they're just running out of steam as much as anything else. They've probably been in a pot quite a while.
Okay.
So the answer there would be to either repot it into a bigger pot if you don't have a sort of suitable place in the garden, or actually plant it out into the garden at this stage. And because, like I say, he's just sort of probably becoming pot bound and he's just running out of nutrients. So put him into a bigger pot, give him a feed, or put him into the garden, give him a feed, and he should bounce back, no bother.
And then if you do replant it in the garden, do you need to continually feed it there, or it will climatise eventually?
Generally it'll climatise to the garden. Sort of any shrub you have with that in the garden, it's a good idea maybe to use like a long term fertiliser, but twice a year. So like the poultry manure there, sort of spring, late summer.
Yeah.
And that'll keep them happy.
Another listener asks, overgrown rhododendron, can it be cut back hard and when?
Yes, can be cut back quite hard, all right. Now would be a perfect time to do it. Rhododendrons are a funny plant in the sense that they set next year's flower bud quite early.
Right.
So they do. So autumn time's a better time to cut them back rather than spring, because if you cut them in springtime, you're definitely going to cut the flowers off them.
Yeah.
This time of year, you may lose some. You might have to sacrifice some of the flowers.
Okay.
But now you can cut away.
And another question in relation to hydrangeas. When is the best time to cut them back? They're just completely overgrown.
Yes, completely overgrown. I wouldn't cut it back now because, like we were chatting about earlier on, it's sort of coming into flower now.
Yeah.
And if you cut it back, you're going to lose any chance you have of flowers this year. So generally, there's two schools of thought on it. Some people reckon don't cut it back in the autumn because over the winter, then the frost can get into the heart of the plant.
Okay.
But I don't really agree with that, to be honest. So I think cut it back autumn or early spring.
Yeah.
And you'll still be all right. And you should just maintain the flowers until that.
Yeah. Another listener asks, why are my blackberry bushes, leaves turning yellow, wilting and showing a yellow powder? Are the fruits okay to eat?
Yes. Big thing there would be blackberry or blackcurrant. Would be the two, sort of the two things.
Okay.
It could be either, if you know what I mean. The sort of powderiness thing on them would be mildew, which is sort of quite common this time of year. But in terms of the fruits, if the fruits are sort of, if the fruits are perfectly good looking, it's grand eat away at them. If they're black currants, they're probably going a wee bit over at this stage. They're sort of more late July. And whereas blackberries, now you're into prime season for them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's an old tradition about them. You shouldn't eat them after St. Michael's Day, which is the end of September.
Right.
Because, do you ever, I don't know if you're familiar with that thing, it's called the cuckoo spit.
No, never heard of that.
It's like it's actually a mite, but it puts out a sort of secretion. It looks like a spittle that basically it protects.
I've probably seen it, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure you've probably seen it even for right through fields as a child. You would have got it on you, if you know what I mean. But that tends to happen after the end of September on blackberries.
Right.
And generally they go bad after that. But tradition had it that was a puka, which was like a bad spirit was going spitting on the blackberries.
Right.
So you couldn't eat them after that point.
Terrify the children.
Exactly.
The
keep them from the blackberries. Now, but no, if it's a blackcurrant, they're probably a wee bit over.
Right.
But if it's blackberry, they would be sort of prime season now.
And imagine if they bite into them, that's in no.
Exactly. But them fruit bushes, naturally, whenever they sort of, they put the energy into the fruit.
Okay.
And the leaves then tend to suffer a bit for it because the energy's gone out of the leaves. But the leaves have done their job.
Yeah, so it's not necessary.
It's kind of just part of the natural cycle. But now you know the berry, if it looks good, you're grand.
Yeah. Another listener asks, why did I not have any flowers on my calla lilies this year? I have had every year since I planted them 5 years ago.
Right. There could be a few things going on there. Calla lilies, very popular plant.
Okay.
That's what they are. I suppose the obvious thing would be there are certain things like slugs, even some aphids like them. So just check them for any sign of pest disease, anything eating at them. Because what can happen sometimes is whenever the flower bud comes out, it's almost the softest part of the plant.
Right.
Where the bad guys tend to go for first.
Okay.
If you know what I mean. So just check it for any sort of signs of nibbling around it and anything else. If it's not that, possibly it's just, once again, running out of nutrition where it is.
Right, okay.
And the other thing with calla lilies like a lot of light. And so if they said it's flowered for like 5 years, just check that there hasn't like a tree grown in front of it or something to block off some of the light.
Yeah,
if you know what I mean. So just sort of, if it, you always have to sort of figure out if it's done well for 5 years and then suddenly it's not. Just has any of the sort of environmental things around it changed?
And in terms of the nutrients that it may need, will it get that from the sunlight or is there anything
generally
else?
It should, all right. Okay. It should get it. But sometimes just last year was a particularly dull year, so maybe it didn't get enough sunshine. So the idea would be maybe give it a wee general purpose feed.
Yeah.
At this stage will help it along too.
And how do you get rid of mare's tail? It is growing on my lawn. What is that?
Mare's tail is a wee sort of, it's a weed. It's pretty much every time I'm on here with Greg, you get asked about it.
It's
a wee weed. It's been about since the time of the dinosaurs.
Right.
Nobody in the history of man has got rid of it.
Right.
I don't think they ever will. It's a wee weed, grows up sort of, it can grow in tarmac and grow in stones.
Right, okay.
And it sort of looks like a fern thing almost, but it's got a very waxy coating on it, which means it, weed killer won't go into it.
Yeah.
So it can be very hard to get rid of. And it's nature, it breaks off at the ground, so you can't even get out the roots properly.
Oh, okay.
So if it's growing the lawn, probably a thing would be to crush it a wee bit by stepping on it or something like that.
Right.
And apply weed killer if that's what you're thinking.
Up.
But that's obviously going to kill your lawn too.
Yeah.
A thing about it was, generally, mare's tails doesn't quite poor ground. So it would be. So sometimes if you actually feed your lawn, and improve the drainage a wee bit and give it a feed, the grass can overcome the mare's tail. So that probably would be the most realistic way of dealing with it long term.
Right. And you haven't found a miracle yet for weeds?
No. I'd be a millionaire long ago.
Yeah, I know. Not that I deal with them, but they just pop up everywhere. And you think,
yes.
It seems to be no time that they're cleared and then they're back again.
Oh, absolutely. I know. They're very resilient, all right.
Yeah. Anyway. Thanks. That is Paul McLaughlin of Balladare Garden Station, Mount Atop here in Letterkenny. Thank you so much for calling in this morning, Paul.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. I'm joined now by Katrina Morrissey, who is the news editor of the Irish Farmers Journal. Good morning, Katrina.
Good morning, Michaela.
So, Katrina, I suppose this is an issue, farm succession, that there has been so much concern about over many years. But the Irish Farmers Journal is starting a series in relation to it. And I suppose there's so much concern that you kind of felt compelled to, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. As you say, it's kind of an evergreen topic. It's something that we always write about in the Farmers Journal. But we felt it was worth putting it, you know, a couple of weeks aside to really look at all different angles. A few things prompted that. We're expecting a report from the Department of Agriculture about generational renewal. We're coming towards another budget in October. And obviously we've had those recent proposals from the European Commission as well. So a lot of things coming together to once again highlight, I suppose, the problem, which is that we have an ageing population of Irish farmers and that's not improving. And, you know, to give a kind of an illustration of that, nearly 40% of Irish farmers are aged over 65, and we only have 4% of farmers aged under 35. So it's it doesn't really speak to an industry that is, you know, going to be renewed with a good influx of young, thriving, active farmers coming in. That's not to say they're not there. They are, but, you know, it's a very, very slow process and there's lots of barriers in the way.
And what kind of barriers is it, you know, in terms of the financial aspect of taking on a farm in today's climate that is the main reason?
Yeah, I suppose the main reason, and 2025 is probably an unusual year to be talking about. Farm incomes are very good this year in the main. I suppose tillage being the only one that might be lagging this year. But in general, farm incomes are very low and farms don't generate, in most cases, they don't generate enough income to have two generations getting an income from them. So, you know, you often have the younger generation might have to go out and want to actually go and work off the farm for a number of years and come back. But often, and this is some of the problem with succession as well, is often they go off, they get really well educated. We're very good at educating children on farms. And then they go into good, well-paying jobs. They could be teachers, engineers, nurses, you know, any of the kind of office or off-the-farm jobs. And they actually pay better than farming.
And I suppose it's that work-life balance as well.
Coming home to a farm then that won't afford you. Work-life balance is huge. And that in particular as well for dairy farms, I suppose, is the one that you're most tied to because of the twice daily milking and the demands. And there are figures there in terms of the number of hours worked on dairy farms being much higher than the other enterprises. And then you have some psychological barriers as well. So we know, and there's been really good research on this in the past by University of Galway, farmers in Ireland very much identify as farmers. Mm-hmm. They're different to, you know, other jobs. Say, for example, if you're a bus driver and you retire, you don't call yourself a bus driver. But yet farmers identify their occupation as very much their being, you know, their core.
Yeah.
So there is a reluctance to retire as well. So there's lots of barriers. We're going to be looking at them and hopefully some solutions to those barriers. We're doing a four-week series across all parts of the Farmers Journal. So we've got the main paper, we've got lots of interviews and case studies, mm-hmm. we've got financial advice, legal advice inside our Irish Country Living magazine supplement. And we're going to be doing more then online. We're going to be doing some videos, some podcasts. So, you know, we're kind of leaving
really
no stone unturned, I don't think, with this series. Yeah.
And in terms of the Commission on Generational Renewal that was set up by former Agriculture Minister Charlie McConnell, do you think in some cases this might be too late for some farmers or some potential farmers?
Yeah, it could be. And I suppose more immediately, is it too late for this year's budget to make any changes as well? As you say, Donegal Man, Charlie McConnell commissioned this this council last year, and they've been looking at all the problems and potential solutions. They're going to report to Martin Hayden. They may well have delivered their report to Martin Hayden in recent weeks. It hasn't been published, so we have no sight of it. The farm organisations and others have, you know, made really good, strong submissions to that, pointing out the flaws with existing schemes and looking for new schemes and, you know, really making kind of proactive suggestions about what could be done to improve the problem. My fear is that if the minister is only getting the report now, you know, how much time does that give him to talk to Pascal Donoghue about potentially funding some new measures, changing tax issues? You know, it's a tight window between here and October. It's not all decided on budget morning. But for farmers then in the kind of medium to longer term, it's never too late to start planning for succession. And it's something that really is the message of an awful lot of people that we've interviewed through this series. And we've talked to loads of experts and you know, we're supported in this by people who are working on this day to day, the likes of FBD, IFAC, Staines Law and the Land Mobility Service. All of them would say start planning as soon as you can.
Yeah.
And that maybe when your children are, you know, when they're very young, or it could be, you know, now is the time to talk to your son or daughter who's working off farm, but you do intend to leave the land to them. And what would they, you know, what's the best solution for your individual farm and your individual family?
And do many young farmers that maybe you've spoken to throughout the course of this, do they feel they have an obligation to take it on, or, you know, they want to take it on, but it's all these obstacles that we've discussed that are just impacting that.
Yeah, lots of young people want to take on farms. The issue is that it does not pay them in many cases. Mm. And then there are others who don't want to come do day-to-day farming, but they do recognise that this, you know, is land that might be in their family for generations. So they may not want to do the day-to-day work, but they may want to hold the land. And in some cases, that might be something like they will lease it out. They may go into either the older or the younger farmer might decide, I'm going to go into, you know, one of these new kind of collaborative arrangements. And we're looking at those in the series. We're looking at things like share farming, which kind of came from New Zealand originally. We're looking at, you know, straightforward leasing, which has been around for a long time. We're looking at partnerships and different types of contract arrangements that might suit, you know, someone. Yeah. And equally, there are probably younger people who really like their career, let's say, as an engineer, and but also love to keep cattle. And, you know, Donegal is a great place for sucklers. It could be that they can marry the two. And mm-hmm. There's an awful lot to be said for the lifestyle of a farming family as well, with young kids and stuff. You know, if it was a full-time farm, there's a lot to be said for being able to rear kids in a rural setting and on a farm.
Yeah. And how does the age profile of farming here in Ireland compare to other European countries?
It's not good, but in a European context, it's actually not that different. So the European figures are quite similar, slightly fewer. 33% of farmers across Europe are age 65 or over, and 6.5% are age 35 and under. So we're about 7% fewer farmers are aged over 65 in Europe compared to Ireland. And we have, Europe then has a slightly higher, 2% higher proportion of younger under 35 farms. So it is a problem across Europe. And of course, mm-hmm. The Irish figures are feeding into the European average as well. And interestingly, there were figures done recently by the European Commission that said there were 3 million farmers who retired across Europe without someone to replace them.
That's
so this is by no
number.
Means unique to Ireland. Yeah. Huge.
Mm. And do you think that something needs to be done now? You know, this needs to be looked at on a long-term basis as well. But what do you think could be done now in the short term?
Well, actually, I was going through the submissions to the Commission for Generational Renewal, and there's some really practical suggestions there from the farm organisations. I'll just focus on one of them. You know, the cost of getting set up as a young farmer, the ICMSA has looked for an increase in the capital investment allowance for young farmers. Because, as you know, if you were to build a farm shed or put in a slatted tank, and a lot, you know, younger farmers are coming on to potentially farms that haven't been invested in for a while. So they need to do more in terms of slurry storage. They may need to do better housing for cattle, for sheep. So that's a practical suggestion to give them a higher ceiling for investment. And then another one is to extend the young farmer scheme to give them longer than a 5-year limit, so that they can extend that scheme and make it easier for young farmers to get in, because access to finance is a huge problem for young farmers, because they don't have the land in their name necessarily, so they can't borrow against it. So it's very difficult to find the huge sums of money that investment in a farm for the future requires.
Yeah. Katrina Morrissey, news editor with Irish Farmers Journal. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And we will, of course, be following that series in the Irish Farmers Journal over the coming weeks. And some of the figures that Katrina was talking about there are in today's paper. So just 4.3% of farmers, according to the CSO, are under the age of 35. 11.2% are aged between 35 and 44. 45 to 54-year-olds make up 20.2% of the farming population, and 26.4% of farmers are aged between 55 and 64, and a huge 37.8% are aged over 65. I am joined on the line by Sophie Irwin. Good morning, Sophie.
Good morning. Hi.
So, Sophie, you have a very special appeal this morning relating to a sentimental painting.
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh. I'm delighted to get the opportunity to talk about it.
Great. So tell us about this special painting.
Yeah, so my mum was an artist. She was an art teacher for about 35, 40 years. Mm-hmm. And she passed away in 2018. And we have really treasured all of the paintings, and there weren't many of them because she gave so many of them away.
Yeah.
And there was one in particular that she had painted of Bloody Foreland that was part of her final degree piece. So that would have been back in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
And she was originally from Kilmacrenan and moved up to Tyrone and then went to college in Belfast and obviously went back down to Donegal to do quite a bit of painting, and this was her favourite scene, and she decided that was going to be her final piece, and it really was a beautiful painting. I don't know if you've seen it on Facebook.
Yeah, I have a photo of it here. It is gorgeous now.
And it's quite different.
Yeah, that was, I'm sure she painted so many after that, but that's a stunning photo for, given her age at the time she painted it.
Oh, I know. She would have been 21, and I think she was commissioned quite a lot after that to go down and paint parts of Donegal for people because her medium was oil, and I think people love an oil painting, don't they?
Yeah.
So anyway, this painting, really precious to us because I think we all grew up with it. It hung above my granny and granda's house in their house, so we always were used to seeing it there for about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, when my mum suddenly passed away in October 2018, we had a nice celebration because she's a very talented lady. She wrote books and, had lots of other pieces that we wanted to show. And this painting was just as you went into the centre. And we'd put it up on an easel because we thought it really is her masterpiece.
Yeah.
And we just have never been able to find it since. And it has really, we can't work it out because we cleared down the area, and of course there were lots of people helping on that night because mm-hmm. there were hundreds of people there, and so we reckon it went into a car or it went into a cupboard or it went somewhere, and it has never appeared since. And so we expected it just to show up. That's 7 years
yeah.
now, and we thought, in house moves or looking in attics, or it's going to show up, someone's got it, one of the family have it somewhere. But I mean, we have searched and searched. So on Sunday, I just stuck it up on Facebook and thought, I'm sure a couple of people might share it. But yeah, I think it's been shared now over 6,000 times, which is amazing.
Yeah, I know. And it shows you the power of, social media. And hopefully we'll be reaching a wider audience here now as well that, there might be somebody out there. And as you mentioned, it is a painting of Bloody Foreland, and it might have appealed to somebody here in Donegal. They may be, happened upon it, God knows where, but, they might have it in their possession, unknown to them, that, where it came from.
Yeah. Yes. And, I don't think we think that it has, on Facebook, people love to put lots of comments on that stuff, but I don't think it has been taken. I think it has just been mislaid. I think it has gone into a car and someone has found it and went, oh, that's interesting, but maybe not my taste, maybe giving it to a charity shop. Who knows? I mean, it could be halfway around the world.
Yeah, and they just don't realise, obviously the sentimental value to yourself about this.
Yeah, and I think for all of us, when someone leaves this world, we're clinging on to the things that matter, aren't we?
Absolutely.
This has been the picture that we all grew up with and remember as children, and I think the thing that it is the picture that we're all so attached to, and we regularly talk about it. And we just keep going through all of the options, and it would mean the world, I think, to get that back. We'd have another conversation then about, how it travels between our houses so we all get to see it. But I think it's very, very precious to us, and we would just love to see it returned if that could ever happen.
And so if we just describe to us again, for anybody listening, the picture, the colours in it, and it's signed as well, is it?
Yeah. It's signed, yeah. So it's signed Wilson in the bottom right-hand corner. So that was my mum's maiden name. She was Renee Wilson. Her family were the Wilsons from Kilmacrenan. And she would always have used quite muted colours. So, it's not a really bright and cheery picture. It's quite muted. It's very Donegal, actually, in terms of the colours and the big burly clouds and the beautiful light coming through. There's a particular part of the painting where there's big streaks of light coming through in the clouds. And it is, I think it just is very particular to Donegal. A couple of mountains in the background and a wee thatched cottage at the front, which I'm guessing is no longer there. So it's also a piece of history.
Yeah.
And it's in a white frame. It would have been framed by my granny and granda, so it won't be anything very fancy or modern. It will be in a fairly plain white frame.
But it's quite a large picture as well.
Yeah, it is quite large. I'm not entirely sure, but it's not small. I mean, it would sit above a fireplace, yeah, and hold its space well. You know, it's not tiny. No.
And Sophie, if anybody has any information, how can they get in touch with you?
If they phone me, or sorry, if they contact me on Facebook Messenger, that's where people have been getting in touch with me and sent me messages and sent me other pictures actually that look quite similar to that. So if they want to contact me on Facebook, I'm there as Sophie Irwin, I-R-W-I-N. And if someone just wants to drop it somewhere and send me a message and say this is where it is, mm-hmm, I would be very happy to go and pick it up, obviously, yes.
Yeah. And anybody listening as well, we have your number here, Sophie. If anybody isn't in social media, they can give us a call here as well and we'll put them in touch with yourself. And I really hope this does turn up for you, and I'm sure there'll be so many here in Donegal too that will be maybe on the lookout now, and hopefully that is returned to you in the near future.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate coming on here, and if it helps with the search, it'll be absolutely amazing to see it returned. And if anybody wants to see the picture, actually, I have made it. It's a public post on my Facebook.
Okay.
So if you want to go and have a better look at it, it's there.
Perfect. Sophie, we wish you all the best with that.
Well, thank you, Michaela.
And hopefully it is returned. And you might give us an update if, hopefully we're hoping that it is returned. So you might get back in touch with us then.
Yeah, absolutely. My goodness, I would be delighted to come and tell you that it's been found and it's hanging somewhere and being appreciated.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Great.
But thank you. I really appreciate you letting me come on and talk about it.
Thank you very much. So that is Sophie Irwin there, and you can check out her Facebook. It's Sophie Irwin, I-R-W-I-N, and we have her contact number here as well if you want to give us a call and you have any details about where that beautiful painting might be. A couple of your comments now. Hi, Michaela. A couple of months ago, Councillor Michael McBride called on all parades to be banned on Letterkenny Main Street, suggesting the town park as an alternative as they affected traffic flow and local business. Why is he not calling on the parade this Saturday to be rerouted? Not everyone in a wheelchair needs a carer, this listener says. At most concerts, people with mobility issues watch concerts at the front, not the back of the venue. Just to let you know, there is a beat, talk and walk with Angus Kennedy of Nature Northwest taking place on Sunday the 24th of August. That is Water Heritage Day. So you meet at Rathmullen Potting Green at 3 p.m. if you're interested in that. The Palestinian children have a rare hemophilia and have to attend hospital in Dublin every 2 weeks. Living in Donegal will be a nightmare of bus journeys to Dublin for them. They don't want to come here, this listener says. That is in relation to, we have touched on it a couple of times this week, the six Palestinian children that are being relocated from Dublin to Letterkenny. Their mothers initially said that they didn't want them to be coming to Letterkenny because they didn't believe that there was adequate care available to them here, given their conditions. But the Irish Red Cross has postponed the relocation and they're due to arrive now next week, and the Red Cross has said that, you know, they have reassured the parents that they will receive the care they need, and they've also said if they need to attend Dublin that they will facilitate that as well. I was in Rathmullen yesterday and took the ferry over to Buncrana for the day, got back home and was disgusted that the bins were overflowing. It's great to have the good weather and the people out enjoying our beaches, but surely on these days the council should be doing more to ensure the bins are emptied several times a day. Michaela, it concerns me that we are being called a racist country because of a few. The postponement of the Indian festival should not have happened. This is just giving in to the few fools who do more to destroy our country than make it better. Absolutely. A problem we have in Bonkrana is people parking on the pedestrian crossing. They are not very visible. There are no lights or nothing. It makes life for disabled people very difficult.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhinney's. Get back to school sorted with all the essentials from school jumpers to shoes. Visit our kidswear department in store or shop online at McElhinney's.com today.
Today's weather, mix of cloud and sunny spells with scattered showers, with some heavy downpours possible. Drier conditions will gradually extend this evening, highest temperatures of 19 to 24 degrees. Now, have you entered or draw? Our first draw of €2,500 takes place tomorrow. If you buy your ticket now, you have five chances to win, with €2,500 being given away every Friday until the 5th of September. You will be entered into all draws and also the big draw to win €10,000. Don't miss your chance to be in the drum for all draws. Call us here now on 074 91 25000, or you can go on highlandradio.com and get your ticket there. One ticket will cost you €15 and five will cost you €50. And remember, if you're not in, you can't win. Joined now on the show by Councillor Jimmy Brogan. Good morning to you, Councillor.
Morning, Michaela. How's it going?
Good, thanks. So unfortunately, we discuss public toilets a lot, and in South Donegal, there has been a bit of an issue in recent days.
Yeah, there's just been an issue with the cleaning of the emptying of the portaloos. Now, listen, this is a problem that happens occasionally, especially when the weather gets good and people visit the beaches and the piers more often. You know, and just it's unfortunate that it's happened again. Like, you know, but it's just something that they have to get on top of. Like, you know, to make sure that the people are contracted to cleaning them out when they should, them more often, like, you know, and that everybody treats them with a bit of respect, like, you know, because they're there for everybody to use. The council provide these portaloos for everybody to use, and it's important that people look after them. You know.
And what is the situation in terms of cleaning them? Is it up to local people, as has been claimed the case in some areas, or is their council staff employed to do so?
Well, I've heard, you know, the council have contracted somebody, like, you know, and the contractors are coming in and they're cleaning the service and the portaloos, like, you know. So it's just a matter of making sure that the people that are servicing it, that they do it, you know, more often, especially when the weather's good. Because, as you know, when the weather's good, more people visit the beaches and piers and stuff, you know. So it's just important that they up a bit whenever people's going to be visiting it more often. Like, there has been a problem too, and now this isn't always the case, but there has been a problem where people in like camper vans have emptied their toilet cassettes into public portaloos, like, you know.
And they're just not built for that.
They're definitely not. Everybody needs respect, you know, the thing, the amenities that's put there by the council. Ideally, you'd want a proper toilet facility in a lot of places, especially the very, very busy places, like, you know, like Rushnalla and different places around the county that are very busy all year round. You know, you'd want a proper public toilets put there, you know, but of course that costs money, like, you know, but at least there's portaloos put out there for the months in the summer, like, you know. So it's just important that everybody looks after them and, you know, make sure they don't do things that's going to cause any problems, like, you know.
And I suppose you made the point there that the council has staff or people contracted to clean them, but particularly we were talking about, you know, parking along beaches and prohibiting local link services being able to operate that. You know, at busy times like this in the summer months, and particularly when there's a good week like this week forecast, that, you know, more resources could be deployed then.
Yeah, well, that's when you need, you know, like, these resources. Unfortunately, we don't get the weather for it. So these resources aren't needed all year round. But there will be weeks during the summer the beaches will be very busy because the weather's good. And you see the weather now that we're getting, and, you know, all the beaches are very busy, and all public spaces, really, because people like to get out, especially because there's still people off on holidays and stuff. And the kids are going back to school next week or the week after, so they want to make the best of it now when the sun is out, you know. So it's just important that there's resources put in place, you know, and that there's sort of a contingency fund there that, you know, that these things can happen, you know, because we all know what's going to happen when the more people are out there, the more the services are going to be used, mm-hmm. and the more cars going to be parked and the more everything else. You know, so we just need to make sure there's a contingency there to make sure that when this happens that the council can deal with it on the spot, you know.
And it's important for visitors, you know, locals using these facilities as well, but for visitors, we want to attract as many people to Donegal, and, you know, if they come along and, you know, they see the state of these toilets, you know, it's sending out a bad image.
Yeah, it's a bad image. And tourism is the lifeblood of the county, like, you know, so we know how important it is, you know, to give tourists a good impression of the county when they're here. Because at the end of the day, if they're not impressed, they're not going to come back, you know. So we need to make sure that impression is good. When they leave happy that they're and tell their friends and tell their family that this is the place to come, like, you know. So,
yeah.
So it's just, as you say, it's very important that they get a good impression of the place, and they leave with a good impression of the place, you know, and then they'll come back and their friends and family will come back. And like I say, you know, without the tourists, you know, we wouldn't have very much in some parts of Donegal, so we need the tourism, like, you know, so we just need to make sure that we're on top of this, you know, mm-hmm. all year round, especially then when the weather gets good.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned there so many resources are put in place by the council and, you know, attending council meetings. So many councillors like yourselves call for these facilities to be put in place, so it is important that they're maintained. Have they been cleaned since, Councillor Brogan?
Well, they are an ongoing maintenance. It's just what happens is when it gets very busy, obviously they should be cleaned more often, you know, and just have to make sure that's put in place. Like, you know, now most of them, as far as I know, there hasn't been any call lately, you know, so over the last couple of days it was a problem there for a while, but it seems to have corrected itself now, you know, whoever's doing it seems to have gotten top of it. But just need to make sure they keep on top of it, you know, and it's up to the public as well to make sure that these amenities are looked after, and if you see somebody, you know, abusing them, that you know call them out, you know, and make sure they don't do it again, because it's up to us as individuals as well as councillors to make sure that these amenities are looked after once they are put in place.
Yeah, and people take responsibility and not to abuse these facilities, absolutely. Councillor Jimmy,
What happens is if it's not cleaned, it's up to the locals. It falls on locals and stuff to do it, you know, mm-hmm. and that's just not fair. That's not the way it should be, you know. So, but like I say, everybody should respect the facilities that's there and make sure they're used properly.
Yeah, and I suppose fair play to those locals that are stepping up to the mark as well, and especially during this current spell of warm weather. You can only imagine, you know, the smell and the scene that they're being met with as well.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, we'd rather not think about it, but at the end of the day, you know, as long as we keep on top of it, you know, there shouldn't be a problem. But and fair play to anybody, locals who do step in, you know, to step up to the plate, like, you know, because sometimes that's what's needed, you know, unfortunately. But, you know, it shouldn't really have to be. It should be, you know, the people that are serving them should be a contingency. If they service them every couple of days, when they know the weather's good, they should just make sure that they're serviced, you know, daily if needed, or every second day, or whatever's needed, you know, it depends on how busy. Some places obviously are busier than others, you know. But
those that are cleaning the toilets, is there one for a particular area, or do they cover numerous towns and villages?
I'm not 100% sure what wider an area the one group would cover. Like, you know, I'll have to find that out. But I know it has been a problem. It's been a problem year after year after year. So, you know, that just needs to be picked up on whatever, you know, to make sure it's done properly. You know?
Yeah. Councillor Jimmy Brogan, thank you very much for that. And I suppose, again, that's another issue that continually raises its head. Another comment. I've asked previously without much luck, which sums up the problem, but does anyone know of an inclusive Gaeltacht which offers alternatives to sports for kids with mild physical disabilities? If anybody has any insight into that, you can get in touch with us here on 074 91 25000. You can text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000 and email comments@highlandradio.com if you have any further information on that. That's where we have to leave it on the 9 till noon show this morning. Thanks to Carling Orr and to Shannon Wilkin for all their help. The 9 till noon show is back tomorrow morning from 9 o'clock. And don't forget, that first draw for the €2,500 was part of the Mega Summer Draw will be taking place tomorrow. So make sure you log on to highlandradio.com to get your tickets or give us a call here on 074 91 25000. John Breslin is up next on Around the Northwest. Good morning.